You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. One out of every 25 U.S. families with children have an adopted child. According to the U.S. Census, about half of these have both biological and adopted children. And to date, nearly 70% of adoptions are open, which means the biological mother and the adoptive family have open communications. But that was not the case in post-war America. During the baby boom in 1960s America, women were encouraged to stay home and raise large families, but topics like sex and childbirth were taboo. Premarital sex was common, but birth control was hard to get and abortion was illegal. Claiming to be acting in the best interests of all, the adoption business at times was founded on secrecy and lies. That story is told in the book American Baby, A Mother, A Child, and the Shadow History of Adoption. Author and journalist Gabrielle Glazer lays out how a lucrative and exploitative industry removed children from their birth mothers and placed them with hopeful families, fabricating stories about infants' origins and destinations, and then closing the door between those parties forever. For Glazer, that story began when she was sent to interview a man named David, an older man looking for a kidney and his birth mother. He was to find both, and Glazer realized she was writing more than just another story.
How far were you into this when you realized it was more than just a story, like a newspaper story?
Originally, as you know, I met David Rosenberg in 2007. I was covering, and that really was a newspaper story, I was writing about the kidney donation that he was about to receive from a friend. And during the first interview, he told me that he hoped the story would go viral and that his birth mother would see it and recognize him as her son. And that didn't happen. But when he called me in 2014 to say that through a series of small miracles and a DNA kit, he had finally located his mother, I realized, wow, this is a story of loss and love and searching, and I was deeply drawn to the narrative of it itself. But David was always, he was a gregarious guy, he'd become my friend, and he was always really instructive to people and prescriptive, and he always was trying to get people to be their best selves and do what they could in the world. And when he told me about the story, he was really specific. He said, I'm about to meet my birth mother for the first time. And I said, well, and he, you know, said, this is an incredible story. I want you to write about it. And I said, how so? And he said, I don't want this to happen to anybody else. When he found out that he had not been, quote unquote, given up, as he had always been led to believe, he had felt unwanted. He had believed that he was an inconvenience to his mother and somehow was standing in the way of her career as potentially a doctor. He'd been led to believe that she was a promising young scientist, which was not true. She's a brilliant woman, but she was not a scientist. He'd grown up with this narrative thinking, well, okay, you know, maybe my mother's a nice Jewish doctor out there somewhere, which wasn't true. But when he told me, you know, try to help make sure this sort of separation doesn't happen to other people, I had no idea what the scope of it was. And once I started studying and learning, I was absolutely shocked that 3.5 million unwed mothers in America had been, for the most part, forcibly separated from the sons and daughters that they had had out of wedlock.
In the book, you talk about how, you know, before the post-war years, women who were pregnant and single would often, or at least try, their families would try for the two to get married. But after the war, things changed and people kind of wanted to move up to a better kind of life. And instead of trying to figure out that situation, to sort of take these girls and young women and put them where they wouldn't be a problem and no one would know.
Exactly. If in the years before the war, if you got pregnant out of wedlock, you basically had a shotgun wedding. period, full stop. Your parents made you get married, and you had a 7-pound, 5-ounce baby miraculously full weight 6 months later. That was extremely common. But after the war, as you said, there was a new middle class to aspire to. The suburbs were booming, and people wanted a different life for themselves, and it was suddenly available to white families. I want to underscore that wasn't necessarily on the docket for people of color. But if your daughter got pregnant in this new era where the sexual revolution was simmering, there was no birth control, for even married couples in many states, there was no sex education, and abortion was illegal, there was a huge rise in unwed motherhood. And as you say, these girls got sent away. This was scandalous and shameful, and they were shunned. They were blamed. They were, the boys got off. The double standard was really enormous and not surprising, but nobody was wagging fingers at the boys, whereas these girls were isolated and sent off to these secret homes that existed in 44 states. And as you said earlier in the conversation, there was a nationwide chain of them. The Crittenden home, which you mentioned, was one of the largest maternity home systems throughout the country.
Reading your book, talking about how these mothers were treated, and not just the mothers, but the babies themselves, that they almost seemed like they were the property of these homes and the people that were getting them adopted and fostered. And they felt like they could treat them at times as experiments.
That is such an interesting word and a powerful word that you used, property of. You really hit that on the head. The girls were sequestered, as you said. They had chores that they had to do. Their parents actually were billed for their room and board, and they had to scrub floors and knit sweaters for. Ironically, I know one woman who had to, knit sweaters for babies in the community. Imagine that. They had to do the dishes and help prepare food, and their mail was read, their phone calls were listened to, they had only an approved list of books that they could read that were in the library. They were all very chaste titles. And then the babies, as you said, once the babies were born, the women had no preparation for childbirth whatsoever. They were sent off to hospitals in taxi cabs for the most part. Some of these homes actually had delivery rooms attached to them. They were scared. They didn't know what was about to happen to them. They got knocked out, and they weren't allowed to hold their babies. And then the babies, as you rightly said, became property of these adoption agencies. And in New York City, at least, there were a series of really shocking, sinister experiments that were conducted in the name of matching the child properly to his potential adoptive parents.
Feels like it hasn't really been that long that this was the case.
It really is something that's in recent memory. You know, when we think about the gay rights movement and how gay people had to live in the closet most of their lives. There's a similar reckoning that's going on in the adoptee rights movement, and birth mothers and adoptees have come together to try to change laws. In 10 states, they've been able to get legislation passed that allows adoptees access to their original birth certificates. In part of this secret system that we've been talking about also included keeping the identity of the child a secret. They were issued original birth certificates that in all but two states, Alaska and Kansas, were sealed, and in their place They were issued amended birth certificates that listed their adoptive name and the adoptive parents as the original mother and father. And this was a way to seal off, quite literally, any chance of an adoptee ever meeting his or her birth kin. And it's taken more than 40 years for there even to be movement about changing those laws in so many states. They changed in Oregon, in Alabama, I believe in 2000. But in so many other places, adoptees don't have the right to access their original identity. And that's in California, in Texas, in Florida. I fully believe that it is a human and civil right to be able to have, to be able to obtain one's original identity, to not live your life with a stolen origin story.
Yeah, and today, of course, there's a lot of egg donors and, you know, semen donors. People have children a lot of different ways, but it seems like there's a lot of people out there who won't know who, you know, their origin is.
Because this is a question that is going to be asked of the children who are conceived with third and second party tissue, and keeping that a secret to these kids who are going to be adults one day is just simply something that's not going to, it's not going to hold because of DNA testing. I'm sure you know the story of Dani Shapiro, who learned that she had been conceived as with a sperm donor. She found her father in something like 48 hours. So it's going to be really difficult to keep this a secret. And I think we need to be as transparent and open about it as we possibly can be, with an eye to the past of what we did. We started the conversation off with the story about the three identical triplets who had been separated and studied for years. And the same agency at the center of my book, Louise Wise Services, did horrific other experiments, testing, as I said, the intelligence of 10-minute-old babies with rubber band guns to measure the decibels of their cries, because they thought that was a somehow future link to intelligence.
Wow. Well, is there anything else you think people should know about this, or, you know, that you'd like to talk about that I haven't asked you?
Thank you for asking me that. I think that the narrative that we've been told as a nation, that adoption was the best solution for everybody involved, is really something we need to examine. Like all precious narratives that we have as a country, we really cherish redemption narratives. That's not the case. So many adoptees grow up feeling they might be told that they're cherished and loved and chosen, but really many of them grow up with a sense of being of profound rejection and loss. They struggle with, they're far more likely to struggle with addiction, to try to take their lives. And we need to be open about what we did as a country and as a society to millions of Americans who are well into middle age now. Open adoptions, you know, that sort of treatment isn't happening anymore. But adoption begins with loss, and I think we need to recognize that. It's not just a happy, you know, story of celebrities who adopt and, oh, this is such wonderful news, look at this, it's so wonderful. Of course it's wonderful for children to be loved by parents who are able to raise them and care for them. But underlying those stories that we see in the news of people in courtrooms, or again, as I said, celebrities adopting. What about that little baby who doesn't have his or her mother? It's not just glossy happiness.
And I feel also, life is sort of in a way a crapshoot, because you could be the most adored baby in a wonderful family, or you could be born into a situation where no one could, either people don't want to take care of you or they can't, and you know your life story is by chance. I mean, it just seems like some people are so fortunate and other people have to struggle so much. And it just kind of all starts before you get born, which I don't think about a lot, but it does seem to be the case. So,
Right. And it's a crapshoot to grow up in a biological family too. And, you know, not everybody is fit. I want to, you know, clarify, not everybody is fit to be able to take care of their children. There are people who struggle with addiction or are abusive or have mental illness issues that, you know, make raising a child a really difficult proposition. But we do need to be open and honest about where our origins are.
That was journalist and author Gabrielle Glaser. Her book is called American Baby, A Mother, A Child, and the Shadow History of Adoption, which tells a story about how some adoption agencies in the baby boom era manipulated mothers, children, and adoptive parents. You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett.